reparation. Sign now.
Yes.
Reparation.
You know.
Repatriation.
Don't you believe me? Don't you think that them should have hear me? 500 years of hard labor fundamentally. Grip them with the eagle mentally hear me. Rising the foundation of a civilization of chivalry. No virtue, of Christianity, not of morality. To prominent safety, to the new arms hear me. Then the king of darkness and Jesus is hear me.
When will it be? Reparation money.
What was that reparation?
You demand. Now that I see that the time
should not hear me. My children is a short labor fundamentally. Bless them with the eagle men still hear me. Rise in the foundation of civilization and charity. No virtue, no Christianity, no morality. To come in and bless you, I know I'm giving. Then the media got killed and Jesus is giving.
When you will it be? Reparation money.
What was that reparation?
You see me?
Oh, just and sorry, I've got the monetary plan. The mission of the future, all of your food. And the suffering of the enemies to turn around and do political to keep in IT for slaves and folks to free up you with international bankers, your colonial rule, telling politicians, masters, and doctors at the school. So I'll get to you, as a paradise of parachute.
When will it be? Reparation money.
What was that reparation?
Should be paid on. Now that I see that the time has come
from landing suffering from a reparation
still not paid.
Oh, from
the last rule in history. By saying that the fact that we are discussing her separate from black men proves that discussion is out of order and we are outside of the cultural continuum of our original development. If we were within the culture container of our original development, we would not discuss her out of context with discussing the man. Because no more than we would discuss one half of a peach and one half of an orange without consideration of the other half. We're not talking about one thing dependent on the other thing. We're talking about something that balances the other thing and makes it whole. We're not talking about someone's better half. We're talking about the other half that gives balance and meaning to the other half to create a whole. We came out of a cultural incubator that said that, did not preach it, created no dogma around it, did not formalize it with a whole lot of literature, but wisely arrived at the conclusion in relationship to it and lived it out. Because we did not create massive literature around it, the assumption is we did not know it, but we knew it so well, we did not have to proclaim it in dogma, in literature, and inasmuch as we were living it out, we understood that the role of the one, while being different, was equal in importance, and there were times when the role of the woman and the role of the man was one and the same. There were times when we recognized the woman as the life giver. That as the life giver, we recognize that role as being over and above something that man could do. And in turn, woman recognized the man as the planter of the seed and the carrier of the seed through which life emerged. But she fertilized the seed and nurtured it into a human being and shaped the human being. No one had to debate this. The debate over the role of women, the categories of man and woman, the creation of confusion about relationship between mother, father, mother, son, came out of Western sociology and psychiatry, most of the middle-class Jews of Central Europe, because we do not look as well as we need to behind the history curtain, behind the slavery curtain. We forget that history is being interpreted through the lens of people who were from the beginning afraid of the woman in power.
Yeah.
While the African was not only relaxed with her in power, permitted her to go as far as her mind could take her without feeling the slightest insecurity. But in a society of plenty, in a society where land was enough, water was enough, women was enough, he could feel secure. The European who imposed his will and created a literature containing a protracted rationale was afraid of women in power, and so he created for his women the same kind of rationale to justify his domination over her as he created to justify his domination over non-European women. In other words, what has happened with the European everywhere he has gone in the world is a process that can crudely be called niggerization. Having reduced most of the world to the process and the status of niggerization, he reduced his women to the same state. Now, because the African did not have to do this, he had a different attitude. And the African today, in his relationship to women, have some of the same faults as the Europeans he's imitating. In fact, the great drawback is the African with these faults. And the one in the Western world have added to these faults by being an imitator. This is why I have repeatedly brought up a lecture I gave a few years ago to meat-clad sorority women on the historical origins of black teenage pregnancy. When I looked at the historical origins of black teenage pregnancy, they came out and hit me, crucified the black man, and I didn't even mention one, because he had nothing to do with black teenage pregnancy historically. And there was no record of any black teenage pregnancy existing in his society before the coming of foreign. There was no record of deserting women before the coming of foreign. And so therefore, every foreigner that came into the society that he had fashioned engaged in a form of cultural pollution. When he gained after this cultural pollution, the African, under the power of the foreigner, thinking that the only way to survive is to imitate the foreigner. Now, plural marriages existed in Africa honorably before the coming of the Arab. But the plural marriages had honor and dignity to it, and they were started with honor and dignity because they lived in a society or the head of the society, or the king, or the chief, or whatever they call the head man, decreed that every woman would be under the protection of a house. It was man's responsibility to give her shelter, home, and he did not have to set up a physical liaison with every single one. No man's got that much energy anyway. This is why I think Walt Chamberlain is the biggest liar who ever lived. If you in one lifetime do eat some of $20, if you in one lifetime do full justice physically to 20, you are ahead of the game. He might have met 20. He might have been alone with 20,000. How many were satisfied? Now, because man's physical relationship was something private, personal, confidential, and discreet, it was not a public matter. Dogs meeting on the street don't close doors because they are of a breed that don't give a damn. And when you begin to parade that activity as a public matter and shout in the street, you're reducing it to the same status. When two human beings to themselves, away from the crowd, negotiated only with themselves, can be a beautiful thing of human relationship and human explosion, if it's done with common sense, with each, with the knowledge, the fact that this beautiful thing has its dangers, and something both have to take this into consideration and be able to handle the danger. Now, what I'm trying to do is to take the present and go back to the past, because we have guided so much on Europe and the categorization of the European man in his relationship with women. We have forgotten that he is no god, because deep inside of himself, he oppresses women because he is afraid of them in a position of authority. And long before he wore a shoe or lived in a house that had a window, we had not proven that we had no fear of her in authority. We had put her in authority and made her a god. We had given her assignments that symbolizes our faith in her. When the goddess Nut was given the assignment to take down the sun at the end of the day, put it in her stomach, and in the morning, take it out and hang it back up again. That assignment went to a woman. You give her the assignment to light up the world. You trust her to do that job. Otherwise, the world would be a dark. Now, if we understand the beautiful symbols of respect that the African man had already given the woman before he became so entangled with this confused woman hater out of the icebox, then we start checking ourselves and realize the wife beater is not me. The wife deserter is not me. Those who impregnate teenagers and walk around away from them is not me. Because my culture did not produce that kind of character. And that kind of character is in existence and is doing a lot of harm. What then can we do about it? You cannot tell a black woman whose face has been slapped. You can't give her no damn lecture. She don't want to hear no lecture. She don't want to hear about the historical this and that. She's hurt. Now, how do you get the here-ness and the now-ness across? And how do you build a society where this man will be held in check and instructed? That is the female half. That does not mean you're going to let the woman rule over this society, run roughshod, disobey every rule in the society. She has the same obligation in the maintenance of the society as anyone else. And when she violates the rules of the society, she must be called to task the same as anyone else. But she must not be taken, looked at as the object of abuse. And you must realize that you have some responsibility to her. And when you touch her physically, and even if it's with her consent, both of you can either change the world through your actions or damage each other in such a way neither one will ever be cured. So it is a major responsibility when the two of you get together. And when two of you are taken out, destroy each other, you have destroyed 10 generations or more. Who knows? You produce 5 children, and those children in turn can produce, marry and produce another generation. It might be generations indefinitely, because a man and woman consists of a gene pool. So together they can set in motion a population that will extend beyond 10 generations. I think we need to seriously read Chikenda Diop's essay on the matrilineal in the culture unity of Africa. Read it seriously. And don't read it in relationship to what you are seeing today, because what you are seeing today is madness created by women hating men who are not too sure of his manhood. Because of Hollywood, because of the mass media, because of gangster movies and the cowboy movies, and the creation of the Western hero, most women, black, white, and otherwise, cannot distinguish between maleness and manhood. A male can excite a woman, a male can with job make a woman feel good. All you need is maleness. Nature endow you with that. But to be responsible, to be protective of her, and to take the consequences of the meeting requires manhood. Inasmuch as sometimes children are confused on this item. We have to start learning something about that distinction. Now, let's go back to where the subject needs to begin, because I have often decried the fact that too many times people point to the top of the tree before they examine the roots. Now let's examine the roots. Now, the top of the tree is to make you understand that there's a whole lot out there in the branches, but the heart, the soul that keeps the tree alive are the roots. It draws moisture from the earth that feeds the leaves at the top of the tree. Now, when we look at the beginning of organized societies in Africa, now what is an unorganized society? A society is unorganized when it has no direction, no order, no set procedure. Once we pick it up at the point of organization, we see the beginning of a structure that will lead to the family. We see them coming together based on kinship, based on region, based on bloodlines, based on regional groupings. And we see now the village, a cluster of villages coming together for protection. But we see an evolution of something in Africa that did not take place in Europe. And this is why there is permanent damage done to the female psyche in Europe, and permanent damage done to the African psyche away from home. I'm saying that taking the African out of the cultural incubator of his creation did permanent damage. And what we're trying to do is to get back to that incubator. You don't have to get back to it physically. If you could just get back to it mentally, psychologically.
Yeah.
You don't have to physically go back to Africa, although it's a good idea if you did. But to feel relaxed. One summer, I took a group to Africa, and at the end of the summer, I set them down. I said, you notice all the children are smiling? No children are fighting each other, pulling over, pulling at anything. No child is stalking away, angry because some child mistreats them. And they are poor. Father is not. They are in the cultural incubation of that creation. They know the things around there. They know the food around there. They know the people around there. They know every parent is a parent. They do not feel out of place and lonely. They never heard of an orphanage and never will until some foreign food starts in their societies and killing off the mothers and the fathers and the relatives, cutting off one from the other. Then I asked the group, all summer, have you ever heard the word MF? No one slandered no one. People disagree. People having fierce arguments. But not the same kind you've been hearing. They are in the culture that produces. When you take a people out of the culture that originally produced them, they become imitators of an alien culture, and they turn on themselves. What would those young men who are shooting at each other be doing at this age in Africa? In a properly run African society, they would be preparing for the responsibility of manhood. We're preparing for the take on a wife, to preparing to support a home. Some of them be in apprenticeship to their uncles, learning a trade. Some would be already in the marketplace, wheeling and dealing. But they wouldn't be shooting at each other, because they wouldn't be angry with each other. You know, these over here are shooting at each other because they are afraid to take on their real enemy, which is not themselves. Because the worst thing they heard said was said about people who look like them, and the guard that hangs in that church looks like the cop, looks like the judge. His society creates a fear in him, and he won't launch a knife into the heart of a cop, because the cop is the same color of the Christ in his church. And so therefore, religion at this point becomes a form of his imprisonment. But before he came in contact with these people, before he understood anything about those societies, Africans had already created an enduring society that had no word for jail, because no one had ever gone to one. These societies existed so long, over half of human history was over before anyone knew that a European was in the world. The propaganda of Europe was so strong and effective, they would take out of your historical memory the time when you were ruling the state all by yourself without starting World War I or otherwise, without starting any wars comparable to the wars the Europeans have had among themselves. They would make you forget, and they would propagate a concept that the world waited in darkness for the European to bring the light, when the opposite is the truth. Everywhere he went in the world, he put out the light. The world would be better had Christopher Columbus and those thugs left the people in the West Indies alone. You had an indigenous population of Asian migrants throughout what is now the Caribbean islands. Different islands, flourishing civilization. The same thing is true of South America. South America, North America, people, different nations, mistakenly called Indians. These people had names, and throughout this whole area. So the European did no favor, and Christopher Columbus discovered nothing, and yet they were so convincing in their propaganda. After he destroyed these people, the African was brought to replace them as the labor supply. Now, further contradiction, a friend and a colleague is head of the commission to celebrate Christopher Columbus's discovery. And he's not one of these almost white Jamaicans either. He ain't no brown Jamaican either. He is black. A very honorable man. Been accommodated by the Queen. Called the rest, the honorable. When we were leaving Senegal a few years ago, and white people waiting in line to get their tickets, very impatient, think they can't get on the plane. Rex Nettlefoot standing calmly behind the line, talking to his friends, and when he got good and ready, walked past everybody, went to the top of the line, got his ticket, walked on the plane. The wife of his, who is this man? What is this? And we said, that is the Honorable Rex Nettlefoot. How did he become honorable? And we said in unison, because we said so. It's high time we nice people ourselves if we want to not. He's honorable because we said so. That's the end of that. But I still can't understand how my dear friend and colleague, the head of this damn commission, celebrate Columbus. Let's get back to the election. I don't know. I don't understand Jamaica anyway. That's all right. I don't understand it. That's all right. Now, there's something that happened early in this formation that gave the African woman not only an edge, but her early participation in these societies gave her some recognition in the society over and above that which other women got in their societies. Because she was a forerunner in the domestication of plant life and animal life, and because she would go to the forest and find out what leaves and what oils, what herbs could cure a man and sustain him, he became rather dependent on her. She would tan the leather with part of his clothing. And so when Dr. Nichols gave us this beautiful example of what happened to the European woman 10,000 years ago, what happened to the African woman 10,000 years ago, I think we analyzed it too well. Because 10,000 years ago, if the European woman, if her man tells her to get out, she has to cover feet. Because she get out, she's in the cold. And those other people are not going to take her in. African man, the African woman, tropical climate, she's done so much for a man he wouldn't dare think about doing without her anyway. And he said, get out, she look at me as a fool, get out where? Who's gonna take care of you? She had to cop her feet, and besides, even if she did get out, there's plenty of land, there's plenty of food. And she got 11 cousins and uncles. So she didn't have to tremble. So from the very beginning, this society was structured to give her not an upper hand, but an even hand in her relationship. Now this continued to develop until monarchies dynasty was created, and she would play a major role behind the scene, but she did not play a major role on the sea, because the Africans believed in a form of balance. You could not solely be a king, a god, without a goddess. You can't be a goddess without a god. Because the Africans saw man and woman balancing each other and couldn't see one without the other. Now you can see why there was no misunderstanding and no gay or sadness in relationship to sex until foreigners came. But you're going to be confused about. You can look at the design of a woman, look at the design of a man, and understand it was literally designed so that certain things can fit. But man and man were designed that way. From Western Asia, West, what you call the Middle East, or Western Asia, before they built the Suez Canal, and for most of its existence, that was North East Africa. People keep asking, if you're born in that area, you know, you weren't in Africa. Well, there was no nothing separating you from that landmass. You could walk from one to the other, and the populations mixed until the Indo-Europeans began to come down into that area, to the Saracens, and all the human waste matter of Europe began to filter down there because looking for something to eat. People always move among us to improve our condition, then turn on us when they get strong enough. We feed them now. Once you get the belly full, they don't want just the food. They don't want just the shelter. They want everything now. And what I'm saying is that with the making of the dynastic period, the woman began to play a role behind the scene and many times on the sea. It was really not until the 18th dynasty, last part of the 17th, but in the 18th dynasty, she began to emerge as a figure of state. While in the 18th dynasty, we have dealt with Nefertiti, with Hatshepsut, we have not dealt with almost Nefertiti, who was an able queen and an able handler of power. Taking into consideration, Europe has produced two great female handlers of power. You don't have to lack either one of them, because neither one of them were lackable. Queen Elizabeth I of England and Margaret Thatcher. They knew and did what all heads of state must do to justify being heads of state, to hold the state together by any means necessary, and to crack whatever head interferes with you doing your job. Elizabeth had to cut off the head of her aged lover, and all she asked for was an apology. He thought he couldn't obey a petticoat, and off with his head. Now, My point is, in looking at this 18th dynasty, almost Nefertari, but looking at Sue on her way to head of state, hanging around her father, Thutmose the First, learning the basics. He's wounded in the war that drove out the foreign rulers and the Hebrews. I'm using a word wrongly now, because there are people Hebrew faith of every color under the sun, and the Europeans who create monopoly over the faith might be a minority within the faith. But they claim monopoly over it anyway. There's no proof that Abraham and his flock belonged to this state before they came into Egypt. And so if they left Egypt with the faith, left Egypt with the language, left Egypt with the culture, Egypt was the training ground and the proving ground of all that we know as Hebrew culture and Jewish culture. Now, Hatshepsut, on her way to power, was a messenger for her father, who said, after me, this girl should be trained to be Pharaoh, not queen. She had her supporters in court, and he had his. He was one as strong as he thought it was. So when he died, and she married Thutmose the Second, who didn't treat her so well, and she did not forget it. And after his death, she had to deal with Thutmose the Third. It was technically his turn to come to power. And when her support proved stronger than his, and he was young in the first place, so she had his head shaved and sent him to the temple and might teach him how to pray. But during the years of her reign, 21 or 31, depending on what book you're reading, she sent him on errands. She sent him to observe different things. When she died mysteriously, and he came to power, thanks to her training, he was one of the greatest pharaohs Egypt ever had. A warrior of the first class, conquering all of Western Asia, now called mistakenly called the Middle East, consolidating the lands of the South. And yet her name stands out as the first great female ruler in history, for we have a good record. The record of Amos Nefertari is not that good. The record of the other great female warriors are sporadic and not that good. They could have been better, but we're talking about the record now. What did Hatshepsut do? She sat down south with his president Somalia, had her grandmother come on a state visit. The men of that day drew the grandmother sitting in state on deck. So there's no question about it. So she came from the south. What would grandma do way down in the south? Grandma lived there. Well, that's where the relatives started from. I'm saying that all the time, the greatest strength in these dynasties came from the south, and it came through the female line. After had to sue. Surprising. She has instituted certain things that we still enjoy. She sent emissaries to a place called Kameh, now called India. She started trade between West Coast, the East Coast of Africa, and China. This trade lasted 1,000 years, was broken off, started again, and lasted another 1,000 years. It wasn't broken off until the 1600s A.D. We have evidence of this. She was interested in all forms of plant life, the different birds in the south, had them brought up to Egypt. She was interested in peopling the labor supply. This is the people of the south. And she came from the south. Egypt had been under great turmoil. Each time Egypt was rescued, by a force from the south. Now, after her passing, another queen, Queen Tai, who gave birth to a sickly boy who didn't really want to be a pharaoh. I'm in Hotel Sephora. But what we have to remember now is, let's focus on the mother, Queen Tai. I've got myself into a lot of trouble by saying it's Queen Tai because her picture is so famous. She got that universal pouting mouth that you can see all over the African world sometimes. Ain't nobody can pout like a black woman when she want to pout. It's a work of art. She can send you all kinds of messages without saying a word. And sit that lip a certain way and that eye a certain way. That's a telegram. And you're going to get it too, one way or the other. Queen Tai, looking at her son, trying to bring a new force to Egypt, trying to bring a new concept to Egypt. Getting rid of the corrupt priesthood of that day. And she didn't agree with this new religion or the new interpretation of it. And when some of the people thinking they could solicit her against her son came to her, and she let it be known that she did not agree with her son's religion. She did not agree with the rapid way he was changing Egypt. But she let it be known, I am his mother. He is flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood. And if you touch this precious fruit of my womb, I bring all the forces of heaven and hell down upon you. That was a mother. I personally have disagreement, but I will not join you in harming him in any way, because I'm his mother. But as his mother, I have a right to criticize him. I have a right to disagree with him. So I disagree as a mother. You disagree as an enemy. And she made it, you know, there's a clear distinction. I will not join his enemies. And she did not. Maybe of the three great women of that 18th dynasty, she's the most neglected, overshadowed by Hatshepsut, overshadowed again by half Asian woman called Nefertiti, probably haven't seen anyway, because the picture you know of Nefertiti is a Greek fake. There's no definite proof that she was Asian. The assumption is she's Asian. Now, the point here is that the woman was playing a major role as the head of state. Nefertiti did serve in partnership with her husband. Her husband, Akhenaten Amenhotep IV, he was homely by almost any standards. Out of balance, elongated head, large protruding lips, large nose, out of proportion to his face, yet she thought he was the handsomest man who ever lived. They humanized the Egyptian monarchy. They were sculptures holding hands. Children on their knees. He told the sculptor, don't pretty them up. Do them justice. And they did. She mysteriously disappeared. But he left his mark. And she also left her mark because she played a major role with this king who believed in peace. So much, he would not crush a flower. So, but the woman continued to play a major role as the dynasties changed. But in the 19th, under the Ramesses, the 20th, to the 25th, it's kind of holding dynasties. But we have to look at great rulers to the south. Makeda, known as the Queen of Sheba, around 960 BC. There's a whole lot of nonsense about who Queen of Sheba was, mainly because the biblical version is the one you read, and that's Jewish folklore is mixed up in this. You will have a hard time getting to the truth. And you mix the story of King Solomon with it, and she becomes incidental. I don't particularly like the story of King Solomon, nor do I like King Solomon, nor do I believe he was wise. Nor do I believe he was a gentleman. But if you read the real story beyond the propaganda and the Hollywood myth, she emerged at a time where a group of people were trying to put together a kingdom called Judea. They had taken this piece of property because a god called Yahweh of their land was soon discarded, and not a single Jew on the face of the earth, black or white, worships Yahweh today. You got some misguided African Christians worshiping Yahweh. We're in search of a God is different from the Christian God, which is the most natural thing you can do, in as much as the Christians are your enslavers. We should search for one different from Islam then. So they're also big enslavers. If you're trying to find a God where the people are not your slaves, then you wouldn't belong to any form of organized religion. Because all forms of organized religion have been your enslaver one way or the other, mentally or physically, but one way or the other. Let's look at Makeda just for a little while. Let's look at her without the romanticism of Cecil B. DeMille's and Hollywood. She was the queen of Sheba, but the empress of Aksum. She's the queen of one region, but there was a larger region that she was still had influence over, which made her empress. Aksum was part of present-day Ethiopia. That was her literal headquarters. Let's take the real historical reason for her visit to Solomon. Solomon had been supplied with a special kind of reddish gold from Ethiopia. He was using it for decoration. The Ethiopian trade commissar at the time was named Tamaran. Solomon keep giving Tamaran some wise saying instead of paying Ethiopian money. Tamaran goes to his queen and asks the queen, can you go and collect some money that's owed Ethiopia? And he said, incidentally, when you're there, check out his wisdom. The incidental becomes a part of history. And the real reason for the visit got lost. Now, Solomon invites her and then he propositioned her to let us join together our respective nations and rule together. Judea is the size of a postage stamp in comparison to Ethiopia. Her train leaving Ethiopia, just her entourage, porters, keepers, her private bodyguard was larger than the armed forces of Judea. What kind of deal is this? Let's join our nation and rule both Ethiopia and Judea together. She won't buy nothing like that. He feeds her food with excessive salt. She gets up in the middle of the night trying to look for some water. He assaults her. He no gentleman. He ain't dealing with no scrub woman. He's dealing with the most powerful woman of the age of whose country is 30 times the size of Judea. That means he got no respect for her. Is he wise? He's just another bunch of scum on the ground. When you call a man wise, you got to show some wise thing he did. Remember, two women came before him arguing about whose child, who the child belonged to. He gave them a sword to cut the child in half. Ain't nothing wise. That's stupid. And yet you say, wise as Solomon. Wise, what made him wise? From this assault on her, it was rape. Let's just stop playing games with it. Let's stop playing games with it. Solomon raped the lady. Raped the queen. Had no more respect for her. To come to his house, all the way from Ethiopia, bringing gifts as it was the custom, and get raped. Out of this rape came a son, Menelik, the first of Ethiopia. He was sent missionaries to Ethiopia later. And that was from that part of Western Asia, there would not only be a string of people converting people to Judaism, but there would be a string later converting them to Islam. And this accounts for the Falashi, the Bet Israel, the large Ethiopian Jewish population, and the large Muslim population in Ethiopia. She would not fade from history because she became a great mystery, but this woman was a fine head of state, and she needs to be studied with some great degree of seriousness and respect. She would never have said, "I'm black, but come to any of you daughters of Jerusalem." He wouldn't have said it either. At this juncture in history, no one spoke about color, no one apologized. Because some contemporary person is projecting something into the past that wasn't there, and largely would not have been there. The finest thing you can say about the Jewish people, they are great record keepers. Another thing you must also say, that they are great record changers when it comes to that convenience to do so. They involve themselves through literature into something, because you won't read and make you believe something which not only wasn't so, could not possibly have been so. When Christ claimed to feel me, you didn't say nothing. Because you don't know that. It's very simple. When Abraham entered Egypt in the 13th dynastic period, all the pyramids were built between the 3rd and the 7th dynastic period. In fact, they had been built 1,000 years before they got there. If you knew chronology, historical chronology, that's not possible. You didn't exist as a people when that was happening. Nor did the Europeans exist as a people. They didn't even have shoes when the pyramids were being built. They're coming out of the ice. Well, all right. Egypt's influence in the north, in the south, began to wane. Castor Pianchi Tahaka would have been conquered Egypt. And what was the main cry? And they had to adhere to the laws of Maya. Can you imagine now? Fighting a war, conquering Egypt, showing Egypt how to be a nation one more time, taking her for a last walk in the sun, and basing a claim on the teaching of one of the last of the great female gods. Now, after this occasion, the Assyrians came back after they pushed the harbor to the south. The Assyrians came, now called Syrians. Disruption, culture polluters. Then the Iranians, then called Persians, came 550. The Assyrians, 666 BC, then the Persians, 550 BC, then the young Macedonian with a gender problem, Alexander called the Great, Great for what, I don't know. Now we see the depression of the role of the women in the society during this period. After the Greek period, Roman period, the Romans began to kill people for being Christians. Finally, so many Romans joined the Christian church, they stopped the show and joined it. The team made Christianity the official religion of the Eastern Roman Empire. Then they began to fight among themselves, and a little known war occurred that history has forgotten. A war between the Romans and the African Christians for control of the church. But no matter what the European is on the face of the earth, he wants to control. You better get this through your skull. Communism fell over one weekend. All the fight, all the FBI, all the CIA, all this thing, stop this old big boogaboo called communism. It was a sham. It's like the sham between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. There's only one party, the white party. But into this, at the end of this, there were Africans killed in the amphitheaters of North Africa, then Romans killed in the arena at Rome. No one wrote any romantic literature about this, but they wrote the romantic literature about the arena in Rome. The Cecil B. DeMille made several spectacular movies about that. There were African gladiators killing Christians. There was Africans being killed by the gladiators. There was Africans on both sides. Color wasn't a factor of consequence in the Roman Empire. But during this early formative period of Christianity, a woman emerged in North Africa that the world had chosen to forget, Hypatia. Because she was so powerful, they painted her as a Greek. She wasn't a Greek. Now check this out with several people, including Beatrice Lumpkin, who's a specialist on women in history, especially women in mathematics, because she's a mathematician at Malcolm X University in Chicago. And she said that no Greek woman held a position of this caliber at this time in history. She opened up an academy. Her father was a mathematician, and she opened up an academy teaching the basics of Christianity. She is the originator of what we now know as the Sunday School. There's some work on her in North African, in a book called North African Prelude. I had reason to check this out recently when writing an introduction to a book called The Arab Conquest of Egypt. Another on a short history of North Africa and about four or five books I just happened to have on my shelf. But the propaganda against her became so intense, her influence became so widespread, a Roman zealot called Peter the Reader. Why'd they call him Peter the Reader? There were so very few people who could read. If you could read, you were outstanding. Led a mob into her academy, killed her, raped her. They scraped the flesh from her bones, threw it in the sea, burned her academy. And thus died Hypatia. Her life is begging for a biographer who would do it justice. But this is the kind of information I've been digging up and living with, and I put down as much as I can. I was running like a house of fire, you know, thinking I could change the whole world before I leave. And faith interceded and let me know what I was trying to forget. I'm human like all the rest of you. And I'm a little less than God. Although I would appreciate some of his awesome power if he could spare it. Now, in the period after the beginning of the Christian, I would say that Hypatia was maybe the most outstanding of the women But the last woman of note, but not the last, are the greatest. In the closing years before the advent of Christianity was Cleopatra II, the seventh. There were eight Cleopatras now. With Cleopatra Bernice, her daughter who married a Roman, who was then ruler, now Mauritania. Cleopatra the seventh, and everybody's arguing about it. Snowden has denounced me all over the country for saying that she was white. She was black. I did not say that. I said up until recent times, every time someone depicted her on the stage and in the movies, it's a white actress with brown makeup and a nappy wig. And Claudia Colbert in 1932 played her for the first time as a pure white woman. After that, there's been a whole lot of Cleopatra, redheads, blondes, and everything. Then, looking at the situation, looking at Cleopatra, I said she still needs to be recognized as an African woman. She had African commitment. She used her charms, her political skills, to manipulate both Caesar and Mark Antony and keep the worst aspect of Roman rule from the backs of the Africans. This manipulation, starting as a teenager, was skillful and well done, and was done in Africa's behalf. And I'm saying you cannot, even if she had a Persian mother and a Greek father, even if she didn't have any African blood, and I'm not too sure about the Persian mother they've assigned to her. I think she had an African father, had an African mother and a Greek father. A bunch of Greek generals named Sesostris changed their name to Ptolemy so it can sound African. The important thing is that she knew Solomon. She knew that Mark Antony had no chance of taking that scrub Egyptian army and taking on that mighty Roman army. And she had warned him against it, yet he still, for his beloved Cleopatra, he took that chance. And Mark Antony's brother-in-law, Octavius, was going to become Caesar Augustus, came into Egypt and told him, if you don't come home and do Roman work, you won't be a Roman citizen. And that's the man who was going to meet him on the field of battle, because he was married to Octavius' sister, and he had deserted her the night of the wedding, had even concluded the deal by spending a whole night. Yet 3 years later, and two babies by Cleopatra, he's meeting her faithful brother-in-law. We're not too pleased by what he treated her sister, his sister. But he told him, if you don't come home and do Roman work, you won't be a Roman citizen. And that's the man who was going to meet him on the field of battle, because he was married to Octavius' sister, and he had deserted her the night of the wedding, had even concluded the deal by spending a whole night. Yet 3 years later, and two babies by Cleopatra, he's meeting her faithful brother-in-law. We're not too pleased by what he treated her sister, his sister. Now you can see the bitterness. In his death agony, Mark Antony discovered that Cleopatra had tricked him. She spread rumor that she was dead. And when he heard that she was dead, then he began to commit suicide. He learned that she wasn't dead after the second plunge of the knife into his stomach. Now, Hollywood. dying because of she lost her beloved Anthony. You know, this woman was so powerful, she could order a man like you order a sandwich. Send me another one. Egypt. When she discovered that the Roman Octavius was going to turn Egypt into a colony, take away the privileges she had fought for, she no longer had control over judges, no longer control over taxes. All she had yielded to the Romans was a foreign policy. She would not enter into any kind of treaty with the enemy of Rome. That's all they got from her. She kept her judges, she kept her ability to collect her own taxes and turn over to the Romans what she decided they should have. She went to Rome and was in triumph. Now she's back home now. When she sees the curtain falling, it was then over her lover. Egypt was her lover. Egypt was her priesthood. Egypt was her priesthood. Now, Dr. Ben and I are the greatest friends, but he thinks she was just a high yellow slut sleeping around with some English with some Romans. And I'm saying that even if she was, she got more benefit out of it than anybody else I can remember. She deserves some consideration as an African woman because she did plead an African cause. And when on her deathbed she would say, I will now join my father, the son. That ended the argument. Culturally, that's African. The worship of the sun god and its derivative as a religion is African. No Greek woman would have ever said that. I think she needs reconsideration and stop claiming her as black, black, black. We use the word too much. Let's come in from a cultural basis. We use the word black, but every time we say, was Christ black? Was Christ black? Don't worry about whether he was black. Establish the fact that he was not a Roman, he was not a Greek. That's the most important thing. Once you establish that, he had to be one of those other people. So he's non-white. If somebody else wants to argue about the shade, you got other things to do. Goodbye, I'm busy right now. So you look at people in that cultured incubator. Now, an Italian is a brunette, a Swede is a blonde. Are you going to argue which one is more European than the other? Woo. I've seen some Italians that look like Uncle Willie. That whole Mediterranean is mixed. That's why they're the handsomest people in Europe. Got a little bit of our blood in them. And that helps a lot. You know, we can tone that tallowness in the complexion, you know. You can wear some color. You walk around like you're living dead. We will lighten up the situation. Now I'm about to conclude because I shouldn't have taken on this anything this big. I will come another day and devote the greater interest to great women of the 19th and 20th century and do justice to it. But I had planned the notes in my mind. Now that I don't write anymore, I just sit and think about what I'm going to say for an hour or so, and that's my way of substitute my extensive reading, because I've already done the reading down through the years anyway. And I just go back and sometimes read some older notes and checked some new things that come into the house. There's an excellent book on the struggle of women in Southern Africa, and Beatrice Lumpkins has done some good work on African women in mathematics, and Claudia Solofsky has done also some works on women in mathematics, but mostly with the West African contingent. I plan to do an appraisal of Zenobia, her influence in Asia, who started the fight to drive the Arabs out of Africa, Nzinga, who fought the Portuguese 52 of her 83 years and saved this part of Africa from the slave trade, Matilda Newport, who tried to keep the French and the British from stealing the little land that Liberia had. Nigeria is 1/3 of its original land surface. 2/3 was taken away by the French and the English while America didn't do anything to protect it. I was going to do something on the women in the Zulu Wars, and I was going to end with the Ashanti War, who led the last Ashanti War, and deal with African women in the 20th century, especially those in the struggle in South Africa, deal with Chaka's mother, Nanga, and deal with one of the great women warriors of Africa, forgotten now, Nihenda from Zimbabwe, who fought the British so well, so many years, and was spitting in their face as they were hanging her. She was spitting in their face. Never gave up, never stopped fighting. Putting a noose on her neck. She's spitting in the face of the people trying to put a noose on her. They hung her, but they hung a good one. We have to remember all of this, all of these people of courage did not die in vain. And we must tell our children. 3 weeks ago in Japan, going into a hall where I was going to give a banquet address, someone met me at the door, young man all tuxedoed down with his staff, and he introduced me, told his staff I was his original teacher, that I also was instrumental in getting him to teach in Cornell. He appreciated, you know, the fact that he could teach in the same school with his teacher, who was instrumental in getting him there. So I'm just flipping, glad to see him, of course. I said, well, but what the hell are you doing in Japan? And she handed me his business card and smiled and said, I'm now Zimbabwean ambassador to Japan. I said, well, Sharecroppers Farm in the backwoods of Alabama. The lives I've touched, and the students I've turned out, and those doing good work, and most of that's most of them. It's been worth the trip. I may not finish my book on the black woman as a figure in world history. Now I'm going to do the African woman as a figure in world history first. Then I'm going to do the woman in the diaspora second, because I'm going to finish my novel this summer, and I've done about 3 books of short stories. I hope to edit one of those this summer, and I'm finishing my second theoretical book, Condition Reflex, The Dilemma of the Africans Away from Home. And I've been reading textbooks, and a lot of my old books, people ask me to come out again, so I'll have my hands full, but One of the main reasons I became interested in this question of the black female in power is that I had three female deities in my life, my mother, my great-grandmother, and my fifth-grade teacher. And I understood something about them that most men don't seem to understand today. But if a woman pulled out of our churches, some of them would have to close their doors, pull out some of our lodges, because they're the service unit. They're not taking away man's prerogative, not taking away his manhood. They're buying him time to be a man and to be a better one. I wish we could soberly solve some of our problems based on the fact that neither one of us have any place to go except toward each other. And we have no lasting partnership except with each other. And no lasting alliance except with each other. I hope I live long enough to see there be no woman problem or man problem, the collective problem of both of us, and one will not outweigh the other, but we will effect a blend between us. And if the problem is collective, the problem is neither women or men. Bringing that family back together again. We have done some beautiful things in cooperation one to the other, and we gave the world its first humanity, cooperating one to the other, and we should at least entertain the idea that white people waiting in line to get their tickets, their invitation. We can do again. So thanks for inviting me tonight.
She would go to the forest and find out what
leaves and what oils, what herbs secure a man and sustain him. He became rather dependent on her. She would tan the leather with part of his clothing. And so when Dr. Nichols gave us this beautiful example of what happened to the European woman 10,000 years ago, what happened to the African woman 10,000 years ago, we analyzed it too well. Because 10,000 years ago, if the European woman, if her man tell her to get out, she had to cop a fee. Because she get out, she's in the cold. And those other people are not going to take her in. But the African man, the African woman, tropical climate, she done so much for a man, he wouldn't dare think about doing without her anyway. And he said, get out, she look at me as a fool. Get out where? She gonna take care of you. She had to cop a fee. And besides, even if she did get out, there's plenty of land, there's plenty of food, and she got 11 cousins and uncles, so she don't have to tremble. So from the very beginning, this society was structured to give her not an upper hand, but an even hand in her relationship. Now this continued to develop until monarchies, dynasties were created. And she would play a major role behind the scene, but she did not play a major role on the scene. Because the Africans believed in a form of balance, you could not solely be a king, a god without a goddess. You can't be a goddess without a god. Because the Africans saw man and woman balancing each other and couldn't see one without the other. Now you can see why there was no misunderstanding and no gay or sadness in relationships. Men and women are confused on this item. We have to start learning something about that distinction. Now, let's go back to where the subject needs to begin. Because I have often decried the fact that too many times people point to the top of the tree before they examine the roots. Now let's examine the roots. Now, the top of the tree is to make you understand that there's a whole lot out there in the branches, but the heart, the soul to keep the tree alive are the roots. It draws moisture from the earth that feeds leaves at the top of the tree. Now, when we look at the beginning of organized societies in Africa, now what is an unorganized society? A society is unorganized when it has no direction, no order, no set procedure. Once we pick it up at the point of organization, we see the beginning of a structure that will lead to the family. We see them coming together based on kinship. based on regions, based on bloodlines, based on regional groupings. And you see now the village, a cluster of villages coming together for protection. But we see an evolution of something in Africa that did not take place in Europe. This is why there's permanent damage done to the female psyche in Europe, and permanent damage done to the African psyche away from home. I'm saying that taking the African out of the culture incubator of his creation did permanent damage. And what we're trying to do is to get back to that incubator. You don't have to get back to it physically. If you could just get back to it mentally, psychologically. You don't have to physically go back to Africa, although it's a good idea if you did. But to feel relaxed. One summer, I took a group to Africa, and at the end of the summer, I set them down. I said, you notice all the children are smiling? No children are fighting each other, pulling over, pulling at anything. No child is stalking away, angry because some child mistreated them. And they are poor. Why are they smiling? They are in the cultural incubation of that creation. They know the thing around that. They know the food around that. They know the people around that. They know every parent is a parent. They do not feel out of place and lonely. You never heard of an orphanage, and you never will until some foreign fools start disrupting their societies and killing off the mothers and the fathers and the relatives, or cutting off one from the other. Then I asked the group, all summer, have you ever heard the word MF? No one slandered no one. People disagree. People have fierce arguments, but not the same kind you've been hearing. They're in the culture that produced them. When you take a people out of the culture that originally produced them, they become imitators of an alien culture, and they turn on themselves. And what would those young men who are shooting at each other be doing at that age in Africa? In a properly run African society, they would be preparing for the responsibility of manhood, preparing for the take on a wife, preparing to support a home. Some of them be an apprenticeship to their uncles, learning a trade. Some would be already in the marketplace, wheeling and dealing. But they wouldn't be shooting at each other, because they wouldn't be angry with each other. You know, these over here are shooting at each other because they are afraid to take on their real enemy, which is not themselves. Because the worst thing they ever heard said was said about people who look like them, and the God that hangs in that church looks like the cop, looks like the judge. He's decided to create a fear in him, and he won't launch a knife into the heart of a cop, because the cop is the same color of the Christ in his church. And so therefore, religion at this this point becomes a form of his imprisonment. But before he came in contact with these people, before he understood anything about those societies, Africans had already created an enduring society that had no word for jail because no one had ever gone to one. These societies existed so long, over half of human history was over before anyone knew that a European was in the world. The propaganda of Europe was so strong and effective, they would take out of your historical memory the time when you were ruling the state all by yourself without starting World War I, II, or otherwise, without starting any wars comparable to the wars the Europeans have had among themselves. They would make you forget, and they would propagate a concept that the world waited in darkness for the European to bring the light, when the opposite is the truth. Everywhere he went in the world, he put out the light. The world would be better. The world would be better. And Christopher Columbus and those thugs left the people in the West Indies alone. You had an indigenous population of Asian migrants throughout what is now the Caribbean islands. Different islands, flourishing civilization. The same thing is true of South America. South America, North America, people, different nations, mistakenly called Indians. These people had names, and throughout this whole area. So the European did no favor, and Christopher Columbus discovered nothing, and yet they were so convincing in their propaganda. After he destroyed these people, the African was brought to replace them as the labor supply. Now, further contradiction, a friend and a colleague is head of the commission to celebrate Christopher Columbus's discovery. And he's not one of these almost white Jamaicans either. He ain't no brown Jamaican either. He is black. A very honorable man. Been accommodated by the Queen. Called the rest, the honorable. When we were leaving Senegal a few years ago, and white people waiting in line to get their tickets, very impatient, think they can't get on the plane. West never. White people waiting in line to get their tickets, very impatient, think they can't get on the plane. West Nettlefoot standing calmly behind the line, talking to his friends, and when he got good and ready, walked past everybody, went to the top of the line, got his ticket, walked on the plane. His wife was, who is this man? What are you? How you doing? What is this? And we said, that is the Honorable Rex Nettlefoot. They said, how did he become honorable? And we said in unison, because we said so. It is high time we nice people out of the steps if we want to not. He's honorable because we said so. That's the end of that. But I still can't understand. have commissioned to celebrate Columbus. Let's get back to the election. I don't know. I don't understand Jamaica anyway.
Now,
for most of his existence, that was North East Africa. People keep asking, if you're born in that area, you know, you were in Africa. Well, there was no nothing separating you from that landmass. You could walk from one to the other, and the populations mixed until the Indo-Europeans began to come down into the area, to the Saracens, and all the human waste matter of Europe began to filter down that because looking for something to eat. People always move among us to improve our condition and turn on us when they get strong enough. We feed them now. Want to get the belly full. They don't want just the food. They don't want just the shelter. They want everything now. And what I'm saying is that with the making of the dynastic period, the woman began to play a role behind the scene and many times on the scene. It was really not until the 18th dynasty, last part of the 17th, but in the 18th dynasty, she began to emerge as a figure of state. While in the 18th dynasty, we have dealt with Nefertiti, we have not dealt with Amos Nefertiti, who was an able queen and an able handler of power. Taking into consideration, Europe has produced two great female handlers of power. You don't have to like either one of them, because neither one of them were likable. Queen Elizabeth I of England and Margaret Thatcher. They knew and did what all heads of state must do to being heads of state, to hold the state together by any means necessary, and to crack whatever head interferes with you doing your job. Elizabeth had to cut off the head of her aged lover. And all she asked for was an apology. And he thought he couldn't obey a petticoat. And all went his head. Now, my point is, in looking at this 18th dynasty, almost necessary, but looking at Hatshepsut on her way to head of state, hanging around her father, Thutmose the First, learning the basics. He's wounded in the war that drove out the foreign rulers and the Hebrews. I'm using a word wrongly now, because there are people of the Hebrew faith of every color under the sun, and the European who claims monopoly over the faith might be a minority within the faith. But they claim monopoly over it anyway. There's no proof that Abraham and his flock belonged to this faith before they came into Egypt. And so if they left Egypt with the faith, left Egypt with the language, left Egypt with the culture, Egypt was the training ground and the proving ground of all that we know as as Hebrew culture and Jewish culture. Now, Hatshepsut, on her way to power, was a messenger from her father, who said, after me, this girl should be trained to be Pharaoh, my queen. She had her supporters in court. He had his. He was rather stronger than he thought it was. So when he died, she married Thutmose the II, who didn't treat her so well, and she did not forget it. And after his death, she had to deal with Thutmose the III. It was technically his turn to come to power. And when her support proved stronger than his, he was young in the first place, so she had his head shaved and sent him to the temple to teach him how to pray. But during the years of her reign, 21 or 31, depending on what book you're reading, she sent him on errands. She sent him to observe different things. And when she died mysteriously, he came to power. Thanks to her training, he was one of the greatest pharaohs Egypt ever knew. A warrior of the first class, conquering all of Western Asia, now called the mistakenly called the Middle East, consolidating the man to the south. And yet her name stands out as the first great female ruler in history, for we have a good record. The record of Amun's necessary is not that good. The records of the other great female warriors are sporadic and not that good. They could have been better, but we're talking about the record now. What did Hatshepsut do? She said down south when his president Somalia had her grandmother come on a state visit. The men of that day drew the picture, drew the grandmother sitting in state on deck. So there's no question about it. So she came from the south. What was grandma doing right down in the south? Grandma lived there. So that's where the relatives started from. I'm saying that all the time, the greatest strength in these dynasties came from the south, and it came through the female line. But after Hatshepsut passing, she had instituted certain things that we still enjoy. She sent emissaries to a place called Kame, now called India. She started trade between West Coast and the East Coast of Africa and China. And this trade lasted 1,000 years. It was broken off, started again, and lasted another 1,000 years. It wasn't broken off until the 1600s AD. We have evidence of this. She was interested in all forms of plant life, the different birds in the south, and had them brought up to Egypt. She was interested in the labor supply, and to the people in the south, that she came from the south. Egypt had been on the great turmoil. Each time Egypt was rescued, rescued by a force from the south. Now, after her passing, another queen, Queen Tut, would give birth to a sickly boy who didn't really want to be a pharaoh, and an hotel before. But what we have to remember now is, let's focus on the mother, Queen Tut. I've got it myself into a lot of trouble by saying it's Queen Tut because her pitch is so famous. She got that universal pouting mouth that you can see all over the African world sometimes. Ain't nobody can pout like a black woman when she want to pout. It's a work of art. She can send you all kinds of messages without saying a word. And sit that lip a certain way and that eye a certain way. That's a telegram. And you're going to get it too. One way or the other. Queen Tut. Looking at her son, trying to bring a new force to Egypt, trying to bring a new concept to Egypt. Getting rid of the corrupt priesthood of that day. And she didn't agree with this new religion or the new interpretation of it. And when some of the people think they were solicited about against her son came to her, and she let it be known that she did not agree with her son's religion. She did not agree with the rapid way he was changing Egypt. But she let it be known, I am his mother. He is flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood. And if you touch this precious fruit of my womb, I will bring all the forces of heaven and hell down upon you. That was a mother. I personally have disagreements, but I will not join you in harming him in any way. Because I'm his mother. But as his mother, I have a right to criticize him. I have a right to disagree with him. So I disagree as a mother. You disagree as an enemy. She made it, you know, there's a clear distinction. I will not join his enemies. And she did not. Maybe of the three great women of that 18th dynasty, she's the most neglected, overshadowed by Hatshepsut, overshadowed again by the half-Asian woman called Nefertiti, who we probably haven't seen anyway, because the picture you know of Nefertiti is a Greek fake. There's no definite proof that she was Asian. The assumption is she's Asian. Now, the point here is that the woman was playing a major role as the head of state. Nefertiti did serve in partnership with her husband. Akhenaten and Hotep IV. He was homely by almost any standard. He had his features were out of balance. Elongated head, large protruding lips, nose, out of proportion to his face. Yet she thought he was the handsomest man who ever lived. They humanized the Egyptian monarchy. They were sculptured, holding hands, with children on their knees. hold the sculpture, don't pretty them up. Do them justice, and they did. She mysteriously disappeared. But he left his mark. And she also left her mark because she played a major role with this king who believed in peace so much he would not crush a flock. So but the woman could he would not crush a flower. So but the woman continued to play
Christianity, the official religion of the Eastern Roman Empire.
then they began to fight among themselves, and a little known war occurred that history has forgotten. A war between the Romans and the African Christians for control of the church. For no matter what the European is on the face of the earth, he wants to control. You better get this through your skull. Communism fell over one weekend. All the fight, all the FBI, all the CIA, all the things to stop this old big boogaboo called communism. It was a sham. It's not the sham between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. There's only one party, the white party. But into this, at the end of this, there were more Africans killed in the amphitheaters of North Africa than Romans killed in the arena at Rome. No one wrote any romantic literature about this. But they wrote the romantic literature about the arena in Rome. And Cecil B. DeMille made several spectacular movies about that. There were African gladiators killing Christians. There was Africans being killed by the gladiators. There was Africans on both sides. Color wasn't a factor of consequence in the Roman Empire. But during this early formative period of Christianity, a woman emerged in North Africa that the world has chosen to forget, Hypatia. Because she was so powerful, they paint her as a Greek. She wasn't a Greek. Now check this out with several people, including Beatrice Lumpkin, who's a specialist on women in history, especially women in mathematics, because she's a mathematician in Malcolm X University in Chicago. And she said that no Greek woman held a position of this caliber at this time in history. She opened up an academy. Her father was a mathematician, and she opened up an academy teaching the basics of Christianity. She is the originator of what we now know as the Sunday School. There's some work on her in North African, in a book called North African Prelude. I had reason to check this out recently when writing an introduction to a book called Our Conquest of Egypt. Now, on the short history of North Africa and about four or five books I had, just happened to have on my shelf. But the propaganda against her became so intense, her influence became so widespread. A Roman zealot called Peter the Reader. Why did they call him Peter the Reader? There were so very few people who could read. If you could read, you were outstanding. Led a mob into her academy, killed her, raped her. Take the flesh from bones, threw it in the sea, burn her cabin, thus died her Hypatia. Her life is begging for a biographer who will do it justice. But this is the kind of information I've been digging up and living with, and I put down as much as I can. I was running like a house of fire, you know, thinking I could change the whole world before I leave. And faith intercede and let me know what I was trying to forget. I'm human like all the rest of them. And I'm a little less than God. Although I would appreciate some of his awesome power if he could fair. Now, in the period after the beginning of the Christian period, I would say that Hypatia was maybe the most outstanding of the women. But the last woman of note, but not the last, are the greatest. In the closing years before the advent of Christianity was Cleopatra II, the seventh. There were eight Cleopatras now. Cleopatra Bernice, her daughter who married a Roman, who had been ruler, but is now Mauritanian. Cleopatra the seventh, and everybody's arguing about it, Snowden is denouncing me all over the country for saying that she was white, she was black. I did not say that. I said up until recent times, every time someone depicted her on the stage and in the movies, she's a white actress with brown makeup and a nappy wig. And it called Cobra in 1932. He played her for the first time as a pure white woman. After that, there's a whole lot of talk about the red hair, blonde, and everything. Then, looking at the situation, looking at Cleopatra, I said she still needs to be recognized as an African woman because she had African commitment. She used her charms, her political skills, to manipulate both Caesar and Mark Antony and keep the worst aspect of Roman rule from being the backs of the Africans. This manipulation, starting as a teenager, was skillful and well done, and was done in Africa's behalf. And I'm saying you cannot, even if she had a Persian mother and a Greek father, even if she didn't have any African blood, I'm not too sure about the Persian mother they were assigned to her. I think she had an African father, had an African mother and a Greek father. A bunch of Greek generals named Sesostris changed their name to Ptolemy so it can sound African. The important thing is that she knew Solomon. She knew that Mark Antony had no chance of taking that scrubby Egyptian army and taking on that mighty Roman army. And she warned him against him, yet he still, to his beloved Cleopatra, he took that chance. And Mark Antony's brother-in-law, Octavius, who's going to become Caesar Augustus, came into Egypt and told him, if you don't come home and do Roman work, you won't be a Roman citizen. And that's the man who was going to meet him on the field of battle because he was married to Octavius' sister. And he had deserted her the night of the wedding, had even concluded the deal by spending a whole night. Yet 3 years later, and two babies by Cleopatra, he's meeting her faithful brother-in-law, not to ask, to please by what she, when he treated her so. He says, not to ask, to please by what he treated her so. He says, but you can see the bitterness. In his death agony, Mark Antony discovered that Cleopatra had tricked him. She spread rumor that she was dead. And when he heard that she was dead, then he began to commit suicide. He learned that she wasn't dead after the second plunge of the knife into his stomach. Dying because she lost her beloved Anthony. You know, this woman is so powerful she can order a man like you order a sandwich.
send me another one. Her great love was Egypt. Her great love was Egypt. When she discovered that the Romans, Octavius, was going to turn Egypt into a colony, take away the privileges she had fought for, she no longer had control over judges, no longer control over taxes. All she had yielded to the Romans was a foreign policy. She would not enter into any kind of treaty with the enemies of Rome. That's all they got from her. She kept her judges, she kept her ability to collect her own taxes and turn over to the Romans what she decided they should have. She went to Rome and was in triumph. Now she's back home now. When she sees the curtain falling, it was then over her lover. Egypt was her lover. Egypt was her mission. Egypt was her priesthood. Now, Dr. Ben and I are the greatest friends, and he thinks she was just a high yellow slut sleeping around with some English, with some Romans. And I'm saying that even if she was, she got more benefit out of it than anybody else I can remember. She deserves some consideration as an African woman, because she did plead an African cause. When on her deathbed, she would say, I will now join my father, the son. That ended the argument. Culturally, that's African. The worship of the sun god and its derivative as a religion is African. No Greek woman would have ever said that. I think she needs reconsideration and stop claiming her as black, black, black. We use the word black too much. Let's come in from a cultural basis. We use the word black, but every time we say, was Christ black, was Christ black? Don't worry about where he was black. Establish the fact that he was not a Roman, he was not a Greek. That's the most important thing. Once you establish that, he had to be one of those other people. Now, an Italian is a brunette, a Swede is a blonde. Are you going to ask which one is more European than the other? Yeah. I've seen some Italians look like Uncle Willie. The whole Mediterranean is mixed. That's why there's the handsomest people in Europe. Little bit of blood in them. And that helps a lot. You know, we can tone that down, that tallowness in the complexion, you know. You can wear some color. You walk around like you're living dead. We will lighten up the situation. Now I'm about to conclude because shouldn't have taken on this anything this big. I will come another day and with the greater interest to great women of the 19th and 20th century and do justice to it. But I had planned the notes in my mind. Now that I don't write anymore, I just sit and think about what I'm going to say for an hour or so. And that's my way of substituting my extensive reading. Because I've already done the reading down through the years anyway. And I just go back and sometimes read some older notes and check some new things that come into the house. There's an excellent book on the struggle of women in Southern Africa.
Beatrice Lumpkins has done some good work on African women in mathematics, and Claudia Solofsky has done also some works on women in mathematics, but mostly with the West African contingent. I plan to do an appraisal of Zenobia, her influence in Asia, Kohanna, who started the fight to drive the Arabs out of Africa, Nzinga, who fought the Portuguese 52 of her 83 years and saved this part of Africa from the slave trade, Matilda Newport, who tried to keep the French and the British from stealing the little land that Liberia had. Nigeria is one third of its original land surface. Two-thirds was taken away by the French and the English while America didn't do anything to protect it. I was going to do something on the women in the Zulu walls, and I was going to end with the Asante War, who led the last Asante War, and deal with African women in the 20th century, especially those in the struggle in South Africa, and deal with Chaka's mother, Nainda, and deal with one of the great women warriors of Africa, forgotten now, Nihenda from Zimbabwe, who fought the British so well, so many years, and was spitting in their face as they were hanging her. She was spitting in their face. Never gave up, never stopped fighting. Putting a noose on her neck, she's spitting in the face of the people trying to put a noose on her. They hung her. We have to remember all of this, all of these cups. These people of color did not die in vain, and we must tell our children. About 3 weeks ago in Japan, going into a hall where I was going to give a banquet address, someone met me at the door. Young man all tuxedoed down with his staff, and he introduced me. Told the staff I was his original teacher, but I also was instrumental in getting him to teach in Cornell. He appreciated, you know, the fact that he could teach in the same school with his teacher, who was instrumental in getting him there. So I'm just flipping, glad to see him, of course. I said, "Well, but what the hell are you doing in Japan?" And she handed me his business card and smiled and said, "I'm now Zimbabwean ambassador to Japan." I said, "Well, all these years from Sharecropper's farm in the backwoods of Alabama, the lives I've touched and the students I've turned out and those doing good work and most of them, it's been worth the trip. I may not finish my book on the black woman as a figure in world history. Now I'm going to do the African woman as a figure in world history first. Then I'm going to do the woman in the diaspora second. Because I'm going to finish my novel this summer. And I've done about 3 books of short stories. I hope to edit one of those this summer. And I'm finishing my second theoretical book, Condition Reflex, the Remember the Africans Away from Home. And I've been reading textbooks and a lot of my old books, people asking me what's coming out again, so I have my hands full. But one of the main reasons I became interested in this question of the black female in power is that
we will not crush. Not to have to please by what he treated us as his sister.
I was going to do something on the women in the Zulu wars, and I was going to end with the Asante war, who led the last Ashanti War, and deal with African women in the 20th century, especially those in the struggle in South Africa, and deal with Chaka's mother, Nainga, and deal with one of the great women warriors of Africa, forgotten now, Nihenda from Zimbabwe, who fought the British so well so many years and was spitting in their face that they were hanging her. She was spitting in their face. Never gave up, never stopped fighting. Putting a noose on her neck, she's spitting in the face of the people trying to put a noose on her. They hung her, but they hung her good one. We have to remember all of this, all of these courage, these people of courage did not die in vain, and we must tell our children. About 3 weeks ago in Japan, down with his staff, and he introduced me, told the staff I was his original teacher, that I also was instrumental in getting him to teach in Cornell. He appreciated, you know, the fact that he could teach in the same school with his teacher, who was instrumental in getting him there. So I'm just flipping, glad to see him, of course. It's a run, but what the hell are you doing in Japan? She handed me his business card and smiled and said, I'm now Zimbabwean ambassador to Japan. I said, well, all these years from sharecropper's farm in the backwoods of Alabama, I've touched and the students I've turned out and those doing good work and most of them, it's been worth the trip. I may not finish my book on the black woman as a figure in world history. Now I'm going to do the African woman as a figure in world history first, then I'm going to do the woman in the diaspora second, because I'm going to finish my novel this summer, and I've done about 3 books of short stories out, and I've been reading textbooks and a lot of my old books. People ask me what's coming out again, so I have my hands full. But one of the main reasons I became interested in this question of the black female in power is that
in IT for slave and chauffeur, free of you with international bankers, your colonial rule, telling politicians, masters, and doctors at the school. So I'll get to you, I'll surprise your parachute. Africa, the killer Cornelius Poppy, South Africa. and the man who ends up this, yo, yo. Oh, mama, mama. Oh, mama, mama. Oh, mama, mama, mama. When I make a look at you, to fall for it, who keep a kibu, not the boy named Zaitna, one new book, not the boy named Samana, repentant and the center of the Murugana, Volka, we have been to Mandela Reserva, Zaitna, President, people, the Real Reserva, then touch the bank with the one money on. Yo, 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 oh, mama, mama, oh, mama, mama, oh, mama, mama, mama,
yeah. bring back the man, the clever man. They have to have 30 years of bloodshed all day long. Then the Christian says the same thing right along. To bring back Jesus Christ, the super Armageddon. No! From being brutality, yeah. Using their financial empires, robbing from these people, yeah. In a war, they get smashed. Which company they get the contract to deliver? All I poop a Bush family and then that's no wonder. Who gets shot? Jill says she can't go buy poor stuff from. What that? This is an economical club. From Wall Street, Main Street, lanes and blocks. Remember that the power they rule from top. Every country is self-reliant, self-sufficient, growing their crops. Hot, what that vision is. With all these wars and misery. That they're perpetrating upon me. Yeah, yeah. International bankers make the profit from the brutality. Yeah. Using their financial empires, robbing from the people. Yeah, yeah.
Fighting over seas and skies.
Is it time to
Burn it like a burn well bright, dread the night, Rastafari.